We are talking about COVID-19 vaccines and testing choices and rights in the workplace. So thank you for joining us today on this very topical conversation. Today is a collaborative webinar with ER Exchange, and I'm joined by Noreen Khan, a well-known ADR practitioner, and her partner Joy Beckett, a workplace health and safety specialist, both from ER Exchange. So today's conversation, we want to have an open dialogue of exploring this topic, going into a couple of questions, background and context that informs South Africa at this point. And then we would really like to get to your questions, which is where we would like to spend majority of today's webinar focusing on. All right. So I think what I just want to mention from a logistical point of view is that we have our Q&A functionality open. So please do feel free to ask questions there, and we'll get to those at the end of the very short presentation. And then we are also recording, which will be made available to everybody who is registered for the webinar. And in that email with the link to the webinar will also be ER Exchange's deep contact details, as well as your key source. All right. So we also, one more thing is that we've got a poll running. It's an anonymous poll, so please feel free to take part in that, and we'll share the details at the end of this webinar. All right. So without further ado, because time is quite precious, I'd like to just hand over to Noreen to give us her views, your opening remarks about where your headspace is at around this topic, and then we'll hand over to you, Joy. I'm sorry we can't see you, Joy. I'm not sure how to. We've just haven't been able to sort it out, but you can hear us.
I can hear you loud and clear. Excellent. And I trust everybody on the call can hear me.
Correct. Great. Thank you so much, Joy. All right. So over to you, Noreen, with your opening remarks.
Okay. Thanks very much. And thanks, everyone, for checking in with us. A very topical issue. And I hope you can hear me. Sometimes people can't hear me through my mask, but we don't want to disobey any legal regulations, do we? So, I mean, one of the things that I wanted to start by saying is that, and it's the starting point of all the things that we have here, and that is that the Occupational Health and Safety Act requires employers, as far as possible, to create a safe working environment for their employees. And this obligation for employers at this time of this pandemic, COVID-19, has turned out to be very complex and quite tricky, and requires a huge, huge balancing act for employers to put in. And you've got to try and balance the employment rights of individuals as well as the employer rights to run a business in relation to that. You've got to balance discrimination and all sorts of things in relation to that. But one also must remember in considering all those things that while it says you've got to have a safe workplace, it says without risk of health to employees, and without putting the risk of employees' health at health. So that's important. So what this is also doing is leading to very interesting challenges in the context of other areas of law, such as, you all know, everybody's so tired of Poppy, but I mean, the rights to privacy and the issues that go with that. And that's important in the context of looking at the issues as juxtaposed to community and individual rights and your rights in the workplace. And this is really creating what we can see as an inherent tension in the workplace. And it's placing a heavy burden on employers to do the right thing, but they're not quite sure what the right thing is. From what I can say from my own history, consult, 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 and facilitation is required, and facilitation is required, and it's important. We're certainly living in interesting times, Colleen. And I mean, that's important. The legalities create constant uncertainties, and they're constantly changing. And I think what's really important is that it's a dynamic environment. And between Joy and I, who've been doing quite a lot of work in this area, we're not saying that we're going to give you all the answers. And the answers we give you today may be different in October, but that's the important point to remember. Mm. We're going to try and give you some guidance on what we think should happen.
It certainly is evolving. And so we're going to, you know, just try to keep our finger on that evolution, both from an ER perspective and from an ER Exchange and piece of perspective. Joy, I'd like to touch on your side, on your opening remarks, please.
Absolutely. I think very, very important is the catalyst for the amended directive, which was issued by the Department of Labor in mid-June, giving employers the right to actually mandate vaccination in the workplace. And that's clearly why we're sitting here today, because it's very topical. And how do employers and employees navigate the space? Now, there has to be a reasonable risk. Okay, reasonableness is not clarified in this directive. But they did also state that employers had around 21 days to make a decision as to whether they were going to make mandatory vaccination a policy in their organizations. And why it's topical at present is because a lot of organizations are trying to get back to work. Granted, we've just come through the third wave. We're coming, particularly in the Gauteng area, out of that, and a lot of people are seeing almost 502 days of working in a disaster management, restricted work environment, really, really knocking their livelihoods. And I really do believe that a balance between individual rights and collective rights is probably where the nub of this employer relations debate is going to sit. But just getting back to that directive, the directive is quite clear that one has to go back and do a re-risk assessment. Most companies on this call today have already done a workplace plan and a risk assessment, perceivably in a lot of work environments, to a remote working situation. But please remember, not all work environments have been working from home. Not all jobs can be directed from a remote perspective, all right? And that is why we're sitting with this conundrum and a lot of employers asking direction as to whether they mandate a vaccination policy. How do they protect their employees coming back online to the work environment? What I'd like to just close with, Colleen, is just please remember, vaccinated or not, the workplaces cannot take a finger off sanitizing, of good ventilation, PPE, all of the practices we've been living through for the last year. So even if you have a good, credible, reasonable business operational justification for a mandated vaccination, your vaccinated population are not immune to picking up the virus. They may just fare better having had the vaccination in respect of recovery and not dying from this dreadful disease that we're living through at present.
Yeah, thank you, Joy. And certainly one of the conundrums that will make it quite difficult at this juncture for employers wanting to implement a mandatory vaccination policy is that government has taken a voluntary stance on vaccinations, and not all groups have come online yet, specifically the 18 to 34s. So what does that practically mean for an employer wanting to implement a mandatory vaccine policy?
Well, it's quite tricky, because if a person doesn't have access, how can you institute that mandatory dictum or policy at present? I just think that, Noreen, you want to offer some of perhaps our client examples in respect of this. I think it's a waiting game. I know a few organizations have gone down that road. We certainly have clients in the mining industry and in the banking industry who've actually taken lead from it being a voluntary government vaccination program and saying, well, it's quite tricky to then mandate it in your workplace. But the directive, not forgetting, let me highlight this, does allow you to subcategorize. So if you have a large organization where you have work processes in a factory environment where you really do feel that mandating those jobs and that cohort of employees is necessary, but you won't do it for your corporate head office, etc., one can take a stance in that space as well. I suppose protecting those non-vaccinated employees is perhaps the answer you're looking for, Colleen, from me, because they don't have access yet until the 1st of September. So once again, our advice to clients has been bring back people in different shifts, keep the distance in factory floor and those sorts of environments. I hope I've answered that sufficiently.
Thank you. No, definitely. I think one of the things directive does do is keep those, the standard procedures and safety mechanisms in place. But Noreen, I'd like to touch base with you. Maybe perhaps you're thinking about practically implementing it from an employer's perspective, wanting to impose a mandatory vaccine policy.
Well, I mean, if you're doing it, you would be doing it from the perspective of a protective place. And I mean, you were trying to ensure that there's no risk to your employees, and you're wanting to try and stop them incurring the getting the virus, and you're trying to also in some ways look for herd immunity. I'm never sure if we're going to achieve that or not. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's quite a tricky thing in relation to that, because people want to ignite their businesses. They want to get back to work. Mm-hmm. And they want to try and find ways of doing that. So we need to try and find ways of trying to look at it. One of the things that we've been doing at this juncture, especially because of the previous question that you asked, Joy, in the context of at this point in time, the cohort of 18 to 34 year olds who make up a very significant part of our workforce are actually not able to get vaccinated. By the way, unless your employer actually tries to pay for it to do it, you can actually implement a system there, but only from the 1st of September in relation to that. So we're trying to say that you need to approach it on a carrot and stick basis. We are trying to say, let's try and do the consultative process, the encouragement process, et cetera. So what have we seen? We've seen lots of people doing things with giving incentives. We've seen incentives from companies such as giving vouchers. If you get vaccinated, you can come back to work and we'll give you some vouchers from Woolies, let's say. I'm just using an easy example. They've given days off. They've given different things. I mean, some employers have like a point system where you work towards getting a reward. They've given that in the context of that. So we would start by saying that's probably a really good way of trying to get people to get involved in this process. I'm not saying it's going to be the only way. And I think, let me give examples. We've seen literally, I'm sure all of you saw in the news, CNN dismissed three employees very recently because they in America, because they came to work and they hadn't been vaccinated. And we'll talk a little bit about how you try and get the clarity on that because we a little bit later. But I mean, that's a huge problem in the context of what are we going to do in South Africa about that? Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about the constitutional issues shortly. Okay.
No, thank you for that, Noreen. I think so. Certainly, the question then around why would an employer deviate from the government's stance, which seems to be very voluntary based, into a mandatory base? And I know you've touched on the element of risk. And Joy, I'd also like to touch on risk with your side from a workplace, the health and safety perspective, but also from a legality perspective. When we talk about risk from an employer's side, what do we mean, really, Noreen?
Well, firstly, remember, in order to implement your COVID process, you had to have a risk assessment. And as Joy said, what this directive is saying, and it's really following under the occupational health and safety process, that you must actually relook at your risk. And you must look at your risk, whether it's high or moderate or low. And I think that's going to be the influencing issue in the context of what's going to happen insofar as risk is concerned. And that's going to be an influencing process. But what we haven't touched on, and maybe Joy can talk about it, is the other option of testing. And what happens in relation to testing? I mean, we have a client who basically has mandatory testing every single day for their employees, but they're paying for it in relation to that, as opposed to implementing a mandatory vaccination policy. That could be another option, but boy, the cost. Mm. I don't know what Joy's got some views on that, I think, as well.
Well, absolutely. I think what we're seeing not only in the South African marketplace, but overseas as well. And Sasol, the commentary on Sasol in our press recently this week is also a lovely example of this. They've gone forth and said that they're introducing a mandatory vaccination or alternatively, a frequent testing for the cohort of employees that are going to be doing plant maintenance. Now, while they're not advocating that for their entire workforce, they're saying the reason that they've come forward and considered this is because when you pull together a maintenance schedule, for example, at Kusile or one of the other plants, you're looking at in excess of 20,000. I think the narrated numbers were even close to 80,000 workers, where they're permanent contractors who actually will move through a plant space, and they don't want Sasol to be accused of negligence or become a super spreader event, which we've seen some super spreader events in our marketplace, in our society, with the rage taking place in Natal in December, which actually just surged the numbers on the Natal north and south coast last year. So just to get back to testing, mining environments have typically, when you look at ranking their exposure to risk, and in particular health risk, they're normally at the upper end of the quartile of high risk. And some of the gold companies that I know of are not adopting a path of mandatory vaccination, but are opting to spend their energies operationally and operating costs towards regular testing. They are also feeding that information not only into the NICD, but also into the National Institute of Occupational Health, so that we add to the epidemiology base of tracking what are the different variants and what we have in our society. But the science is still pointing towards vaccination. And I'd like to just give this to you because Alan Whiteside is a professor I've been following, and he does a blog around the COVID. He's going to be stopping it shortly, but just sitting here and now, as at the 8th of August globally, we've had 4.3 million deaths from this COVID virus. And we, to date, have had 4 million vaccinations. Granted, that may be only one in certain countries, areas, but it may be two in other countries and domains. But we've had 4 billion people vaccinated. So there has to be, you know, some safety in respect of believing that this herd immunity could be reached. The South African government was stating that if we got to around 67%, close to 80%, we might have achieved a substantial herd immunity for our country and our society. Not forgetting travel. Guys, I know I'm going on, but could I just quickly say, Noreen and Colleen, in closing, travel and our movement has been limited during this pandemic. And the gatekeepers of movement have been PCR tests, the gold standard, and increasingly antigen tests, as those have come on stream and are a little bit more efficacious, are being let through the doors of certain countries in regulating movement of non-citizens and their citizens out of countries. So the travel industry has been hardly hit. Their livelihoods have been decimated. And we're seeing that perhaps the potential of some vaccine certificate down the stream may become necessary. Now, that's not too foreign for us as a society or as people, because not forgetting endemic diseases, when you move around the globe, yeah. If you're coming from Africa, yellow fever, you have exactly. to have your yellow card when you move around. So yes, choices and rights, I know, is our topic today in the workplace, but this issue of are you going to get vaccinated or not is permeating through all levels of our society. And one area where we could have some control, granted, is in the workplace. And employers have a very hard task.
Well, certainly employers it does really take the workplace home with you, but it also takes wherever you go home with you. I mean, and this is the problem, is that a lot of people are saying is that this is how it's transmitted, and everywhere you go and everybody you engage with is coming into that space. So there's a lot of factors and moving parts, we can all agree. Noreen, I'd like for you just to maybe touch on the legal liability of forcing a mandatory vaccine policy specifically.
Well, there are two things. I think that firstly, you'd have to look at what the issues are in your workplace and what your risk is, as I talked about earlier, and also looking at the ability for people to work from home or not. And I think we must be very careful about talking about people who work from home, because we might all be white collar workers, but that's not the general populace of our country, and we need to look at it very specifically. And I think that's an important point to look at insofar as that's concerned. And I think then also you've got to look at the fear that people have and the process, and you've got to try and consult, try and find consensus within your workplace. I mean, I think what I also think in looking at around what do you do with somebody who doesn't want to actually deal with it, or doesn't want to work with somebody who's actually been in a situation and or hasn't been vaccinated. Can I move on to that? Okay. Mm-hmm. I think those are the key things that we have to look at. And I think the first thing that you have to do is you have to start with, what are you going to do about it? So if you've got somebody who's frontline facing, or to your clients, whatever, you're going to have to try and deal with different things. Now, obviously, coming from my own history and what the issues are, I think that one needs to look very, very specifically at how you deal with it. And I would, and I'm suggesting, and most people are saying, that you should look at it in the context of the codes of good practice that we have in relation to the Employment Equity Act, and in particularly the Code on Disability, and also with reference to the HIV/AIDS code, which is important. And you know, the application is important, and you would have to treat the person who doesn't want to be vaccinated maybe with an impairment, because that's what the code suggests. The problem, and I want to say, and I'm not ignoring the fact that, is this an impairment of your own making or not? And that's where I think some of the law is going to come around on that, in that context. And I think it's pretty clear, and we're going to probably follow the HIV/AIDS law on that, that actually in principle, you've almost intentionally actually infected somebody. So what would you do? But as an employer, you would then need to see if you could reasonably accommodate that employee. Mm. And that's what they're asking you to do. You need to reasonably accommodate a non-vaccinated employee with the aim of reducing the impact of that impairment process, and also make sure that they've got the capacity to do their job. job. But the code also says it must be done in the most cost-effective manner, and it mustn't cause undue hardship to the employer. Now, that may cause huge undue hardship to the employer in the context of the cost and the process. As an example, we have a client who has got various buildings on their campus, and they are actually implementing a system where you can work in certain areas if you're vaccinated and others if you're not. Now, I'm going to argue strongly when we get into some of the constitutional arguments, maybe, that given the issue, that would actually not be seen as a discriminatory process because of the nature of the pandemic and the process that goes around that. But it's important to understand that a code of that nature doesn't impose a hardship on employers to the extent that they would have to do it. But what you would have to do is try and find reasonable accommodation. What do you do in that process? We all know as practitioners in this kind of field that if you can't reasonably accommodate the person, ultimately then you have to look into operational requirements. And if the operational requirements of the employer no longer support you to actually continue in the role, I'm of the view that you would have to then go into an operational requirements process and actually deal with it in relation to that. And that would be a really important point to understand for everybody, because it's important to understand that there is going to be a limitation on rights. And yes, I understand that there's a constitutional issue, and we all keep talking about the principle of, okay, yes, you can do this so long as it doesn't interfere with a person's constitutional rights to privacy, their constitutional rights to religion, their constitutional rights to their body. But I think that one of the things that we're forgetting, because we're such a society at the moment dealing with rights of individuals as opposed to necessarily the collective. Mm. And Enjoy always talks about lives and livelihoods. And this is really where we're getting where the rubber hits the road in this issue. And that is that we need to look also what the Constitution says around justifiable limitations on your rights. And I think that at some point, and I don't think at this point, that they might very well become an issue where actually you may actually be able to justify implementing a mandatory policy.
Mm. So if I could just maybe come to wrap up one element, which I think is going to be the question on everybody's lips, is that can I then, as an employer, and I require a mandatory vaccination policy, dismiss employees for not getting vaccinated? And the thread that comes through is consultation, reasonable accommodation, try to work through it with the employee, try to understand where that's coming from. You will have to go into medical assessments, et cetera, and the capturing of that data will, and the logistical arrangements and operational requirements around capturing that information may be very difficult for some companies to actually manage. So after all of the text boxes have been exhausted, Noreen, it is to say that an employee could then be terminated as it stands in law for not wanting to get vaccinated.
Yes, I'm of the view that you could do that, but I would actively encourage people to firstly follow sort of a consultative process. Yes. First, I don't think you could do it as of an immediate process. Mm. I think that what we've been encouraging clients to do is implement things such as declaring based on an honor system. Remember, we've just had the Poppy Act implemented. So there's a whole violation of privacy rights, but I think it's going to become a point when you're not going to be able to do that. We're seeing people all around the world implementing vaccination passports and things of that nature. And Joy talked about the travel industry. Let's also talk about the fact that you have to actually get vaccinated, certainly in our government schools, in order to actually arrive there as a grade R pupil. Mm. And so it's not like there's no precedent in that context.
Absolutely.
So I mean, obviously going to become a very contentious issue, but I think in the end that employers are going to be able to, if their operational requirements dictate it, are actually going to be able to implement a principle and a system that actually says, yes, you can terminate an employee. But I think that you would have had to do a whole lot of things to actually get to that point. It wouldn't just be an instant process.
Definitely.
I mean, and also, sorry, Caroline, just to go on, Joy and I are both chatting away because we're excited about our topic, in the context of that you also have a situation where we've seen with clients where people have been vaccinated and they want to have a return to work, but then the employee is actually not declaring that they're vaccinated, so they don't have to come back to work because they're happier working at home.
Yes.
And how do you deal with that? My answer is a disciplinary policy. It's a process. It's a misconduct.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think if I could just, before we go into closings, I'd like just a quick synopsis on your views around just that, the employees then refusal to come to work, specifically because there are unvaccinated employees, and what would happen in that space, or if there's a real risk of exposure. And I think if I could just touch on you first, Joy, and then we could go to Noreen on that question.
Well, first, let me deal with the risk of exposure, because let's for example, use the scenario that you're a mandated vaccination policy organization. You are going to have far more paperwork, and you definitely, whether you're a mandated vaccination or non-mandated employment universe, have to report any exposure in your work environment, not only to the NICD, but more importantly now to the NIOH. So the NIOH is your National Institute of Occupational Health. It's very well known in mining circles, perhaps not in other circles of employers, but they have an entire registration system. 4,800 companies are registered currently, and you do need to register those instances of an event such as a COVID infection taking place in your work environment. Okay. One thing that I haven't mentioned, and perhaps I'm digressing, Colleen, you will pull me back, but I do want to just put this out there for the listeners on this webinar, is that with a government voluntary vaccination process, they have covered themselves by having a voluntary no-fault injury scheme, which they're running through their compensation fund. Granted, it would be in jointly and severally managed with the RMA, Rand Mutual, which looks after DIMWA, which is the mining sector of our economy. And so once again, our occupational health disease and injuries is a no-fault system. So it takes the onus on the employee to prove that the employer was negligent. So there is no recourse at this stage, but I'm not saying there's none, which is what we also think. If you take on a street of mandatory vaccination, you're taking on that potential litigious damages, harm.
And I think that comes back to the risk element that we had also touched on. But perhaps I could just bring us back to the question at hand, which was really around the employee's refusal to come to work when there's non-vaccinated employees, because I think that will also come quite clearly through to the questions which we're getting to shortly. And we know that, you know, as it stands, employees cannot be held to charges against them if they're not coming to work because of that fear of being exposed or having to work with employees not vaccinated.
Well, I mean, so Colleen, I think that there's going to be, you don't have to manage your employment relations situation very, very carefully. And bearing in mind that the directive that the DOL put out, I mean, talked about, okay, that in the context of, you can deal with things when there's a reasonable and justifiable reason. Absolutely. In relation to that. So then people put their heads around what is a reasonable and justifiable process. So an employee refuses to come to work. Let's give some classic examples. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wanted to have my mask on. You're sitting every day and you're sitting with me now, and your colleague sits in the office opposite you and he wears his mask, or she, sorry, like this in relation to that. That would be seen as inappropriate. We've seen that. Or what happens is you're sitting somewhere and the room that we're sitting in has got all the windows open because we have offices where the windows are wide and the air runs through, but it's cold at the moment. So somebody gets up and closes the office, but stipulation is that you have to do that. So an employee would then have a reasonable justification process to say, I'm not coming to work because the person in relation to that, just to give a few examples.
That's a very good example. And I think those are real life practical examples that we've all experienced where it becomes a little bit tense when you say to somebody, put your mask on properly. So I think that those are the areas that as HR practitioners of business and as employees, fellow employees, we're going to hold each other accountable to keeping up with the standard that's required to create that safe working environment.
Yeah, but of course it's going to create some employee relations challenges.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so I'd like to just go into a 1 minute closing from both you and Joy and Noreen, before we go into questions. I can see that coming in quite fast. Let's have our final say, closing comments, and then we can move into questions, please.
I mean, so firstly, okay, I think let Joy go first.
Okay, Joy, do you want to go first for us?
Well, perhaps what I could just do is just say for anyone who's thinking of a mandatory vaccination policy, quite frankly, these points would point to someone who isn't as well, but registration for and facilitating vaccination then becomes the employer task. So all persons wishing to receive the COVID-19 vaccination, obviously as they come on stream, need to be registered with the EVDS, that's the government electronic data set, all right? The employer then should assist all eligible workers with some time out. If there's any adverse reactions, there needs to be leave associated with that. If there's any damages as a result of adverse reactions, help them assist them with the compensation avenue as well. And notwithstanding, trying to find out some survey, we've been advocating to some of our clients to understand whether how much resistance there is tangibly in the organization, because an organization, an employer may be boiling the ocean and he's got, you know, 99% or 100% of his staff are wanting to get vaccinated anyway. So it's a moot issue. He therefore doesn't have to register a new risk with the Department of Labor. He doesn't have to go through the onerous medical consent, the legal ramifications of all of that and managing that in-house himself. That is just all the onerous follow-up in respect of going down that mandated vaccination policy route. I think perhaps let me end in closing with that bite of information.
You know, thank you so much, Joy. That's super helpful. Thank you, Noreen.
And I think just to add to what Joy is saying, that you also need to document very carefully if your employees decline that they want to be vaccinated. We are proposing that you then actually you actually sign and get people to actually undertake and say that they don't want to be signed. Obviously, you're going to have to keep it in the context of being, you know, confidential and all the things that go with that. But also, just in closing, before we ask some questions, is that, you know, you need to relook at your risk. You need to relook at what's happening. You are in a position and you are able to dismiss employees ultimately, so long as you've facilitated and consulted, et cetera, in relation to employees and tried to reasonably accommodate. And there's the law and the jury's out still on some of those issues. You can ultimately effect dismissals. Obviously, you would actively discourage that. You know, it goes against my grain. Okay, all right. But you can also look at different things, and employers can introduce different rules about how employees come to work. You can have different working hours. You can also have, are you almost implementing a discriminatory process where people can work different hours, those who are vaccinated and those who are not. Yeah. And I think all those kind of things which might be against what we think actually might end up becoming okay in the context of there not being discrimination. So it's a tricky issue to balance between employer rights and the employee rights that we are also instilled in. But I think at this point, we need to understand that we're balancing lives and livelihoods.
I think certainly that just from those closing, I can already pick up a number of topics that could be further explored in other webinars. And even this little time is not enough to get into everything, but I think maybe we could address some of the issues that come through with the questions, which I'd like to get into right now. All right. So the first question we have from Anonymous is, can we require staff to provide proof of vaccinations as part of a new staff onboarding process? Noreen, you would that.
So I've looked into this and I think that if you include it as part of your POPI implementation process, and you say that that's part of your employment process, I think that you could include it. Obviously, there's the right to privacy, et cetera, but I think you can argue the constitutional issue the other way around, and that you actually try and your employer's obligation to create a safe workplace. I don't think you could not employ someone because of that reason. And I don't think you'd be able to justify it at this point. It may come.
Yeah, definitely have to. Joy, are you happy for us to move on, or did you want to add to that?
Good. Okay, great. Oh, sorry, I'm just unmuting. All good?
No, move great. On. Another anonymous question. There are many differences for the Mines under the Mine Health and Safety Act. You mentioned OSHA.
Joy, Ms. Walsh.
Joy?
Perhaps we could just ask that person to clarify, because the Mine Health Safety Act is governed by a DMWA. Legislation, and I'm not quite sure what the question was. What are they asking?
Asking if there are any differences to the OHS and the DMWA, Joy.
Yes, there are, but in this instance, perhaps I could just share that the Chamber of Mines, they're not called the Chamber of Mines anymore, the Mineral Resourcing Committee, their labor practice unit and their health advisors at this stage, to my knowledge, and I don't believe it's changed, but as Noreen has said, it is an evolving space we're living in with this pandemic and the legislation applied to workplaces. They're not making it mandatory, or they're not advising that a mandatory policy in respect to vaccination is the way to go. But the mines, I'd just like to add this, do you have the safety of an experience of having sizable occupational health facilities, oversight of occupational medical practitioners. So they have not only the operational infrastructure, they have the operating capital, and they are testing regularly. So they are protecting their employee base by making sure that their preventative surveillance is making sure that no one in the workforce has the virus, active virus. Yeah. Okay, so they're doing loads and loads of testing. It's not unlike how they managed getting to know your status in the early 2000s with HIV and AIDS.
Thank you, Joy. Okay, Susan asks, if you are making use of IE vouchers gifts to motivate staff members to go for the vaccine, can anti-vaxxers not make a case that is unfair discrimination? Maybe an argument can be made that an employee cannot go to the vaccine due to health conditions, religion, etc.
But obviously, and certainly, I think that an argument can be made, and I think you're going to have to balance it out. And there is some law already on this area, and you can say, yes, maybe it is a discriminatory process, but you would need to make sure that you're giving vouchers, etc., obviously excludes people on health, religious, etc. Mm-hmm. grounds. And so you're going to have to try and deal with that in that specific way. But I've actually been trying to explore with people, what are the health and religious grounds in that? Mm-hmm. And actually finding very little explanation in that. We just talk about it, but there's not a real cogent argument on that. But mm-hmm. obviously we need to test that. And I'm not suggesting there isn't a cogent argument, because there certainly are many to come, but we haven't actually seen them yet.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Noreen. Emma asked, what is your opinion about including a no job, no jab policy in collective agreements?
Look, I think it would be the same as the answer to the first question about, I think that you should have it as an encouraging process. It should be a whole lot of other issues. You'd have to deal with it in the poppy process, and you'd have to do it in screening and a criteria for jobs. Mm-hmm. Could you set it as a criteria? I think if it's an inherent requirement of the job, then you would absolutely be able to do it. If it's not an inherent requirement of the job, I think it then would be harder to put it in an agreement.
Yeah, so broad spectrum application would be a lot harder. Yeah. Joy, are you happy for us to move on to the next question? Did you want to add here?
Sorry, unmuting again. All good?
Thank you. I think this might be a good segue for Sam's question. Is mandatory vaccination not a unilateral change in employment conditions and terms?
So in some ways it is, okay. But then what you would do, and that's why I started off at the very beginning of this saying, okay, and I wanted to, I'm going to end at the end. Consult. Mm. Okay. Have a process, you have a system, you talk to employees. Joy and I have been getting many of our clients to do surveys in relation to that. And so you can try and gauge it, bearing in mind that in any event, to develop your COVID-19 policy and your risk matrix, you asked people to declare whether they had actually any kind of comorbidities anyway. So you already have a lot of information in relation to that. So yes, it could be, but I think that you're going to be able to get around.
Thank you, Noreen.
Could I add to that, Colleen? Just to remind everyone that the directive actually cues us as an employer to predetermine your operational risk with consultation and further analysis.
Yes.
So if you're introducing a mandatory vaccination policy, it would not be a surprise to your employees, because you would have taken them through not only a facilitated consultative process, they would have been able to contribute to that. And as Noreen has said, at this stage, we pretty much have a handle on the staff who are higher risk with their own personal medical, predispositions that they have in their own physiology. And if people at this stage haven't come forward to declare that, I think very, very rarely, if you introduce a mandatory policy, it's incumbent on them to declare that.
That's a very good follow-up. From coming out of this, everybody was almost, in a disclosure of comorbidities. So certainly that data is put most likely captured by the employee at this point. I think this is a good segue for this question. And I think it just takes us a little bit back, but it's good because, this is where people are not clear. Michael Susanna asked, there is mention of a directive, Joy. Which directive is this?
It's a directive issued by the Department of Employment Labour on the 14th of June. If you go to their website, you'll be able to find the media statement release, which is so much easier to read than the entire Government Gazette document. That's where you can find it. And large organizations who have infrastructure with government gazettes coming through their legal sections and or their HR or health and safety teams would have been on top of this. It came through in the middle of June. It didn't give you much time to respond and actually register with the Department of Labor if you wanted to go down the route of being a mandated policy employer. But Noreen and I have been debating this, and we think that employers would be permitted to come online with that at a later date. Granted, at that stage in June, we didn't even have dates for, never mind, the 35-year-olds to 49.
So, what I would think in the context of that, you know, when people were given 21 days, I think it was 21 days, by the 1st of July, you had to declare if you're going to implement a mandatory policy. I think it was sort of people were taken a bit by surprise on that. And as in all laws, my view is that you could then make an application on the condemnation process. I've tried to speak to various people who are involved, and there are people doing that in relation to this process. So you would be able to say it, because also it would be almost impossible to have said you can have a mandatory policy because you didn't know at that point whether the government was actually going to, when you were going to roll out and permit people, maybe a bulk of your workforce, to be able to be vaccinated.
It's a very difficult timeline to have.
I think you can have good grounds on the law thing, condemnation.
And so just remember, sorry, Colleen, and just remember that was also at a point in time where a lot of organizations were focusing on their compliance and alignment to POPI. So there was a hell of a lot of distraction, and people might not have seen this come in. Absolutely.
Okay, Anonymous asks, what are your views and advice on whether an employer or company could be held strictly liable for its non-vaccinated employees or workers infecting others in a super spreader event?
Okay, so I think that you'd have to go back and find yourself in the Occupational Health and Safety Act there, in the context of the fact that I don't think you can hold people liable for super spreader events, but, and you also, the law says to you in relation to that, that you need to actually do it where as reasonably, you know, as reasonably as possible. It doesn't say you absolutely have to prevent it. And in some instances, that's not just going to be an appropriate process. Having said that, if you were being lackadaisical in the implementation of some of your things, I do think that there could be some kind of negligence process. I mean, I think a good example is that you're sitting somewhere and people are not socially distanced, and probably you and I would be okay for grade school, but we're not quite there, but we make an accommodation because of the video situation. But you would need to have actually made sure that you do that, because let's just remember, being vaccinated, fully vaccinated, does not stop you from being a carrier. And we know that it's different to other kind of vaccines, although it's still a vaccine. I know Joy's going to shout at me now for saying that, okay, in relation to that. And the principle is that you, even if you're fully vaccinated, you still have to wear your mask to work. You still have to socially distance. You still have to sanitize and do that. So that's why we are proposing to many clients a hybrid model of people coming back and not, and a process around that. So sort of what they've been doing now, many people, and some people haven't, but still having literally a discriminatory workplace where vaccinated people sit and non-vaccinated people sit. We think it would be justified.
I think the one thing that would be, just for my side is to add, is that, that where does that end? You know, because then we're talking about separate restrooms, potentially you're talking about separate entryways, and it becomes very difficult to draw the line about how you do the separation, how long, how far does that extend to?
Well, and Colleen, how do you monitor it?
And how do you monitor it? I mean, and certainly, what is the feelings about that? I mean, from just a South African context, how do people feel about separate, especially given our history? Okay, Hilton, hi. How is it suggested that one assesses workplace risk where it's confirmed that being fully vaccinated does not prevent an employee from becoming infected, from being infecting others in the workplace? Can I read that again? It is suggested Joy, do you want to answer that?
Do you want me to take that one? Let me try and take that one. Hilton, I think that one needs to look at the job execution in that work environment and what would be reasonable or justifiable in respect of mandating and having a mandated vaccination policy. Remember I said the directive said one could do a whole organization or subsections of an organization. So it goes back again to that risk and how cogent or tangible is that risk of transference in the work environment. Remember, we've just had almost a year, and I don't know what the incidence, and maybe we need to do some questioning at NIOH. What has the incidence been of transference in work environments to date? because it is a communicable disease at this stage, this COVID-19, and one can pick it up in the grocery store. You can pick it up anywhere. So again, the onus of proving that you've actually caught this disease in the workplace. You know, the onus is put on the staff member to prove negligence on the part of the employer. Yeah. Do you think I've answered that adequately?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Joy. Great. This is interesting. What religions may have legitimate objection to the vaccination? Do we need a letter from the priest, or must it just be accepted their word on their religious objection? Is there a culture objection as well that should be accepted? And Noreen, you touched on this briefly.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't purport to be a religious expert. But I think that there are some religions where there are objections in the context of that. I don't think you are just obliged as an employer when somebody says, oh, well, it's against my religion or it's against my culture. Mm. There has to be some kind of reasonable verification and reasonable justification that you follow in relation to that. Likewise, on culture, we've already had a situation with a client where there was involvement of a traditional healer and the view in relation to that. And you have to take the process through and try and deal with it in a constructive way. So, I mean, and one has to also deal with fear. But one of the things that I'm saying is that I think that there's also a lot of not enough education, and we need to have some obligation on education. That's what I also mean when I say facilitate, consult, educate.
Absolutely. Okay. That's incredibly helpful. Thank you, Noreen. Okay, so Chaba asks, would you consider mandatory masking and social distancing as part of reasonable accommodation for those who don't want to take vaccines? And I think we've answered that one, so thank you for that. Bruce says, can you discuss how an employer would deal with an employee claiming reasonable justification for refusing to come to work due to the presence of non-vaccinated employees under Clause 14 of the revised health and safety measures, which prevents an employer taking any action against that employee? And I think we did touch on this one already, unless there's anything else you wanted to add to it, Noreen.
I do think we've touched on it. I think that you would, I mean, some of the things that we've done and we've seen acceptable is like actually having separate workplaces, and almost, I mean, it's almost, I'm almost promoting in some ways, which I don't really approve of personally, but I'm trying to come to terms with it, a discriminatory process, okay? Because, and you would have to actually make separate workplaces for vaccinated people and non-vaccinated people. I mean, even in one employer that Joy and I have advised, we've got vaccinated people coming to work at a certain time and non-vaccinated at another time. So that's another way of trying to deal with it.
But I think also from that is, you know, the human capital that you have in your people and their ideas and and the way you can work forward with it in a collaborative way is also going to be quite interesting. Yeah. And I think that's exactly where that facilitative element comes in for people to engage with their employees to understand how can we go through this and retain jobbers. Anything from your side on this, Joy? Can I move on?
Apologies, I'm just unmuting. Yes, I think you can move on. Yeah. Again, choices. Perhaps I could just say this. Employees need to consider the choices. They have a choice. And if the work environment that they find themselves in is just not, to their liking, they can also move. I mean, I know that's quite controversial, me saying that, but we are going to be living through quite a conundrum between vaccinated and non-vaccinated populations, and it's really not making an employer's job that easy. It's a little bit of a minefield, and as Noreen said earlier, we're probably going to have case law in respect of this, I think the debate is going to turn to away from the I to the we. I really do think that our society's on that pivotal point. How do we balance an individual's right and an individual's right to earn a livelihood and work in an environment if you also know the inherent restrictions in being able to execute your job? If you're going to be putting up huge restrictions to being able to do your job, if you're able to do it remotely and there's no issue, then, you know, I think employers also need to become more flexible around hybrid working environments. If there's no impediment to performance, then forcing people to come back is also perhaps a thorny issue for employers to get their heads around as well. Not an easy space.
I think this next question is also something I've deliberated and I thought about, and I'd like it to push it to you, Noreen. Bruce says, Would it be an incapacity or an operational requirements if you were to go the dismissal route? If operational requirements, is severance payable or does it fall away as a reasonable alternative, get vaccinated was offered?
Look, I think it's going to be a fantastic question and it's going to be answered. I'm going to give my personal opinion.
Please.
I can't say I'm right or wrong. I want to be clear on that, Bruce, in relation to that. So my personal view is that, you know, you have to try and explore alternatives. You have to try and see what the options are. And I think what Joy just said in the context of is that it's not a one size fits all. I think you might even need to have, and as I said, it depends on your workplace in the context of looking at a mandatory vaccination policy. You know, are you client facing? Aren't you? Are the issues are? What are your requirements? Just by the way, we've got a client and they told us that in any work that they're doing in Zimbabwe and two other African countries, you can't actually go to a meeting if you're not being vaccinated. They don't let you in. So, I mean, that's also, it's going to limit you in relation to that. But I do think that it may be seen as a reasonable alternative. And then you're going to have to balance the reasonable alternative with the constitutional issue.
Yes.
And ultimately, somebody's going to have to decide around the constitutional issue insofar as, you know, is it justifiable? And I mean, I think the scale and the magnitude of the pandemic may play in the side that it is justifiable. And therefore, you may actually see rights for the first time quite significantly being limited.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Noreen. Enjoy. Okay, so we're moving on to the next question. And I think then I'd like to just go into some other questions we're getting. So we are getting quite a lot. We're trying to get through as many as possible. Would a case-by-case mandatory vaccination policy taking into account the nature of job? Okay, and that's it. Not be more defensible than across the board.
So I mean, I think I've answered that, but absolutely. I agree it would.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Bruce. Okay, I'd like to just move on to, sorry, I'm getting a couple of questions here as well. So Wendy asks, how long can we require employees to wear masks? Obviously, as long as DMA regulations are in place and requires masks, et cetera. But once the DMA is lifted, we are going to find it extremely hard to make vaccinating employees wear masks. The whole point of mass vaccination is that eventually we do not need these measures because COVID-19 will become epidemic like flu.
So I think that you've answered the question yourself, that at this moment in time, until we've achieved the herd immunity, whatever it is, people are going to have to wear masks. And I think we're in for a much longer period than we all think. And yes, I mean, the epidemiologists that I've spoken to say that ultimately we're going to be actually having vaccinations every year as a booster.
So I think for me, the question is also just around how do you require employees to wear masks, especially if they're vaccinated? And I suppose, I think you did touch on it as well. If you say your workplace safety requirements require it, then you're basing it on the policies and procedures that are in place.
And I think it's set out as well that even if you're vaccinated, it doesn't mean that you're not a carrier.
Correct.
And therefore you have to wear your mask and you have to still sustain those things. So therefore you have to have masks, keep sanitizing and all the issues that we know, and then adopt what I think is a hybrid model in the context of having some people come to work, some not.
Yes.
Remember, you're getting a lot of CEOs complaining about the lack of innovation happening, although I think in times of great crisis, you get innovation.
Right. Joy, are you happy for us to move on? I just want to ask this question as well over here.
Certainly happy.
Thank you. Why should fully vaccinated people have to be inconvenienced because some people don't want to be vaccinated? They have taken necessary steps to protect themselves. Surely only unvaccinated people should have to wear masks, physically distance, etc.
Well, I think that Joy is probably more qualified to answer that than me. But from what I understand in relation to that is that even if you're vaccinated, it doesn't mean that you can't be an asymptomatic carrier. And so therefore you still have to wear a mask.
Correct. I'll just add on to what Noreen's saying. So COVID-2 is an influenza. No epidemiologist might I add, and I think this could be a very interesting next webinar for us to pursue and get a clinician on the line. But from what I understand is even though you've been vaccinated, you can carry and transfer, you yourself can be infected by COVID-19. What the vaccine does is it builds up a level of immunity that the severity of the conditions will not kill you. So the science is already there that the people who have been vaccinated have had lesser sort of severe symptomatic conditions related to the disease, and in many instances has not led to them dying. Now, I know that some people will attest to the fact that they've had a vaccination and been hospitalized. I'm not saying that I think we need to also interrogate those individual mm-hmm. circumstances, because they may have some other comorbidities that they're living with in their own physiology, which would have contributed, and not necessarily only the COVID-19 infection. So yes, there's a lot of folklore and a lot of supposition and all the rest of it, but we've been vaccinating as a society. Certain diseases we've been able to eradicate, like smallpox. This happens to be a influenza, which we, as a species, human beings, we haven't got around eradicating flu. And every year you take your flu shot or your booster. And I think SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, falls into that category. And as Narina said, you will need to be taking booster shots, because we've seen that the virus has morphed. We're no longer dealing with the alpha or beta, we're now dealing with delta. And I'm so happy that we've changed from names of regions of the world to that system of classifying the new hybrids and new measures. But
thank you.
But vaccination does protect you. It offers you and affords you a level of protection.
Okay. Anonymous is asking, we are hitting the 1 o'clock mark, so we are going to try and push through a little bit more. And then obviously people can just dial in for the, we'll rather look at the recording for the rest of the questions when we get to those ones, if they need to drop off. What is the view on reasonable practical measures when considering vaccinations? Reasonable practical is a narrower term than physically possible, and seems to me to imply that a computation must be made by the employers, in which the quantum of risk is placed on one scale and the sacrifice involved in the measures necessary for averting the risk, whether in money, time, or trouble, is placed in the other. And that, if it is shown that there is a gross disproportionate between them, the risk being insignificant in relation to the sacrifice, the employers discharge the onus on them. And that is a quote from a case.
Well, I think that the references I've made consistently to the Constitution of South Africa actually basically embody exactly mm-hmm. that.
Great. Thank you. What I'd like to do, just because we're at the 1 o'clock mark, is just go into the poll, and then we can perhaps move on to some other questions. If Joy and Nareen, you have an appetite for more questions.
So long as other people are happy.
Yes. Let's look at the poll results. I think it will be interesting to see what's come through. So can everybody see that? I think you could. Great. So we've had 100% participation, which is quite impressive. So people have said, do you have apprehension of getting vaccinated? 29% said yes, and 71% said no. Do you think that getting vaccinated should be mandatory in the workplace? 43% said yes, and 57% said no. And have you been vaccinated? 49% said yes, 18% said no, and 33% said not yet. So that is a little bit of interesting fact around the around our members today that have joined us on the webinar. So thank you for that. Thank you for taking part. We are happy to do a couple more questions, and perhaps, you know, we could just do one or two more. I have a problem with vaccines. People are dying. One of my family members got vaccinated, and the following day she was hospitalized. I just wish that we emphasize that it is your choice not to vaccinate. And I think we've
emphasized that very well. Yeah. But I think that also sometimes people don't make the connections between whether vaccinations actually, there's mm-hmm. very little evidence showing that people actually can be made ill.
Yeah.
I think that the CEO of Discovery has got fantastic presentations and data on that mm-hmm. if people are interested.
And I think that's exactly it. It comes right back to your point about educate, research, facilitate, take people on the journey, and that could be a workplace thing as well. Anonymous says there is mention of directive. Okay, we did answer the directive question. Would placing unvaccinated employees in a different office accommodation amount to unfair discrimination? And Nareen, yes, I feel that we've answered that. As I understand, a vaccination is only going to alleviate the symptoms of COVID, nothing else, compared to the COVID vaccination. Measles, polio, et cetera, various vaccinations protect you from getting the disease. How will this justify making vaccinations mandatory? Joy?
A very good question. And I suppose therein lies the decision of the employer. because I've mentioned that some mining houses, and in fact the advice from their health advisory and their labor committee has been not to make it mandatory. I think that making it mandatory gives you a lot of requirements in respect of compliance and oversight and governance, etc. And it's going to be difficult because you don't have a free market where you can go and get the vaccine. We only have the government option to access the vaccine. So I think that in time vaccines will be available freely in the market space. But at the moment in the South African dynamic, it is controlled by our government. Our government does make it voluntary. We are a country that is registered with the WHO as a voluntary country in respect of, yeah, of vaccination of our entire population. So I hope that's answered it. It will make it very tricky. But remember, as Noreen and I have said throughout this webinar, if you have particular peculiarities in the way that you do your work on a factory floor, in an office environment where you're not, don't have the ability to have free flowing air, distance your staff, etc., the Department of Labor now has allowed employees the right to actually make it mandatory to keep their business going. So we've got this artful balance between, you know, lives and livelihoods yet again.
Thank you, Joy.
Yeah, a difficult one. Yeah.
Emma asks, what in your opinion would constitute a reasonable justification for an employer refusing a vaccine where the employer has implemented a mandatory policy?
Well, I think firstly, obviously, the constitutional issues we've talked about, which is the religious issues, the bodily integrity, or things of that nature. They may have an allergic history, there may be medical history in relation to that, and they may have justifiable reasons in that kind of context. And that's why I think that you'd be able to, but you can't just say it. You're going to have to actually do some follow up, et cetera, and look at it, maybe even in an incapacity issue. Not that you would go the incapacity route, but looking at
certainly explore
it that way.
Anonymous asks, vaccine hesitancy is very real in our country and flows into our workplace. Can we try educate consultation about vaccine hesitancy to provide some of the answers to questions employees may have about vaccines and try to understand the basis for hesitancy in our workplace? And certainly we've said definitely facilitation might be the best route about doing that and going about that. And surveys too. Surveys could also be enormously helpful.
We've answered that.
Yeah, and we really encourage surveys and regular check-ins with your staff. So it's going back to the age-old principles of actually consulting your people.
Listen to the people. What was that, Joy? Sorry, I think you were saying something. We missed you.
I was just going to concur with that. Absolutely.
Great. George asked, does Section 66 of the Compensation of Occupational Injuries and Disease Act read with Schedule 3 not create a presumption in law that the COVID-19 was contracted in the workplace if the employment is considered high risk of infection, i.e. nurses, receptions, shop till operators, underground mine workers, etc.?
Yes, it does, George. Okay, thank you.
Great.
And hopefully it's going to be reported into the NIOH. And I think that within the mining infrastructure and within the medical industry, they know the route quite well in respect of what they're required to submit.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that we've seen and Joy's quite on top of is the fact that in terms of the NIOH, and I don't think people have been doing it as much, but if you actually have more than two people contracting it at your workplace, you actually have an obligation to report it. And we can help with that information if people need.
Okay. Anonymous, several brands of COVID vaccines are approved for use in pregnancy. However, there is much anecdotal evidence that suggests it is unsafe, i.e. emergence of clotting followed by miscarriage within 48 hours of receiving a vaccine. What is the suggested approach when dealing with pregnant employees?
So, I mean, my view would be that an pregnant employee must be treated as a person with comorbidities, although it's, please, pregnancy is not an illness.
Different. It's different.
Okay. And then if the person refuses to be vaccinated, you would have to try and accommodate them in some way. And that's really a good example where you would have to implement reasonable accommodation. There are varying issues that have come out medically on that, and Joy might have views on that. Okay.
Whilst I'm not going to discuss those medical issues, what I'd like to just preface and say, in our global community in Israel, they are insisting on pregnant people being vaccinated. We're not in our marketplace, in our domain. And there will be justifiable reasons for a person saying they don't want to be vaccinated, that they actually are only taking folic acid and they don't want any other interventions while they're carrying their child. And one needs to respect that. Then there would be limitations to how they work and do their work and what, you know, all of those good things in the labor space. What I would just like to just state, sorry, is some of our clients have mixed up and they always just include pregnancy as yet again another comorbidity. It would be treated as a comorbidity, but from a health perspective, we do want them to have their own category. Pregnant ladies are pregnant. They do not have, hypertension, diabetes, all of those things. But that's just me being particularly around health classifications, nothing more than that.
Thank you, Joy. Okay, another question from George. Can an employee refuse to work in a workplace where their colleagues refuse to get vaccinated and the employee has vulnerable persons at home that they may infect, notwithstanding the fact that they were vaccinated and were still infected by non-vaccinated employees?
So, I mean, I think we've covered it in some ways. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we definitely have covered it. And certainly, George, I think if you maybe just look back at the video, I think we've gone through that topic. Interesting comment from Wendy is, death after vaccination does not equal death due to vaccination. And I think we'll just leave that one with the people who are online and just ponder on that one. And then finally, we surveyed employees in January and 38% said that they would be vaccinated and 44% said not sure. We ran an intensive education information sharing campaign. And in June, the view had shifted to 64% yes and 24% not sure. Shows you what you can do through constructive approach. Thank you so much, Anonymous. I think we couldn't have ended it off on a better note. Thank you for that. So that wraps up the questions. And what I'd like to end off with is perhaps just to keep the poll results up as a good indicator of this group of people and where their headspaces were at. And certainly, I'd like to just invite everybody to reach out to ER Exchange and Bookie. So if you have any further questions, and like I said, I will make the details available in my recording email, which will be sent as soon as the recording is up and ready for dissemination. Other than that, thank you so very much for joining us. It was a long one, but I hope an interesting one. And we trust that we will be safe and that we will consider these very interesting dynamic concepts and keep the debate going with facilitation, conversation, and lively debates.
Thanks, everybody, for all the great questions.
Thank you so much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Cheers.